the American Police Hall of Fame. We are the keepers of the history of individual law enforcement officers. We are a facility that honors the fallen and supports their families. We are a training facility that teaches civilians how to be their own first responder. We are a great place to visit and learn. Go to APHF.org to find out more.
Freedom Guns is your local gun store for the Rockledge Cocoa area in Brevard County, Florida. Stop in and meet Mike and the gang and see the great deals they have on long guns, handguns, accessories, ammunition, AR build kits, and Liberty safes that come with free delivery and installation. They're located at 1255 Florida Avenue, just north of Rockledge High School. For more information, check them out at freedom-guns.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. The man, he said, let's go, so let's go. We are locked and loaded on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. This is all about firearms, the Second Amendment, and all things pertaining thereto. And I am Royce, your host and super spreader of Second Amendment constitutionality, bringing it to you from both barrels with 100% felt recoil and no suppressor, baby. And we've got a lot to talk about today, as we always do. This is part two of the last episode regarding serial numbers, and we're going to pick that up here in just a second. First, I want to remind you, you can catch this program at shootingstraightradio.com. All of the episodes are auto-loaded there from iHeartRadio, so you have no excuse for missing out on the program. And you can email me there, royce@shootingstraightradio.com. You can also follow me on Truth Social, at Royce Bartlett. I am leaving Farcebook on the 1st of 2023. I've had enough of being shadow banned, kicked off the platform for things I say or pictures I post. And as a matter of fact, they've gone back years to find things to ban me and to, again, shadow ban me and keep people from seeing my posts and things. I get to the point where I have to tag about 200 people just to get people to see my posts sometimes. It's ridiculous. And I refuse to live in that kind of a situation. So I'm leaving that platform, just so you know. Catch the Voice of the Blue podcast. That's also on most of the podcast platforms that you will find this program on. It's dedicated to the law enforcement profession. A lot of you probably think, oh, Royce is an anti-cop person. No. I have called out law enforcement before whenever they cross constitutional boundaries, but I do back the blue as long as they back the Constitution. And I believe they are a very vital part of our society. They hold that blue line in between us and anarchy, and their worth should never be dictated to us by the media. All right. Also, real quick, hey, we got, by the way, we got a new commander of the Kentucky Listener Retention Squad, the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast Retention Squad, Captain Centers up in Kentucky. Really appreciate you up there, Captain Centers, you and your family. Appreciate the constant contact from you guys and the encouragement up there. You got a fine family, and blessings upon you, sir. All righty now. So in the last podcast, we talked about how serial numbers are a stepping stone to disarmament and how insidious that they actually are and how they were basically the foundation for registration, because they were trying to install registration back in this country back all the way since 1934. Actually, they started literally firearms registration in this country. It has been in effect since 1934. By the way, a little correction. In the last episode, I kept referring to the National Firearms Act of 1938. Major faux pas there. 1934 is the correct date. Some of you were probably screaming at the speaker going, 1938, 1934, you idiot, not 1938. The correction there. Your host is not perfect, never has been, and never will be. But all the way back since 1934, there has been gun registration in this country of all NFA weapons, National Firearms Act weapons, short-barreled shotguns, short-barreled rifles, fully automatic weapons, and suppressors all have to be registered with the government. We look at it as if, you know, this firearms registration thing is a future event. People, it's been in place since 1934, and they're trying to just simply expand it. Let's go ahead and grab a hold of the truth of this issue. And serial numbers were not required on most firearms by the government until 1968, when they said that all manufacturers had to stamp a serial number on every firearm, every cartridge firearm that they created. And that laid the foundation for future registration. They were originally, like I said, required on the NFA weapons, and that was the beginning of it. As we all know full well, the primary purpose of gun registration is to enable the future confiscation of those firearms whenever the government decides that it's time to do so. But of course, remember that the government will only take guns from people that the government decides is a threat. Now, I've told you this before on this program multiple times, and I will say it yet again. Those in the Democrat Communist Party, up in high places and in various bureaucracies throughout the federal government, whether they be in the ATF or the FBI or in anywhere in the Department of Justice or in the CIA or the NSA, they have bad plans for us, and they want to disarm those of us that they deem to be a threat. That's why they're calling us domestic terrorists. That's why if you wear a MAGA hat, M-A-G-A, Make America Great Again, you are deemed a threat by the FBI. You're deemed a domestic terrorist. If you go to a school board meeting and stand up for your children and for their purity of their minds and then demand that smut and pornography be removed from the library there at the school, you will be deemed a domestic terrorist. They're already doing it, people. It's not an accident. It's not, ignorance on the part of our detractors and those that want to disarm us. They don't care about disarming Antifa. They don't care about disarming BLM. They don't care about disarming any of the communist radicals. They want to disarm you and I, all of us who believe in upholding and defending the Constitution of the United States and governing our country thereby. All right. Now, since we are the threat, we are the ones they want to disarm. Now, governments all throughout this country, state governments, local governments, and the federal government always have had this sort of notion in mind. They have done it many times. They did it when they disarmed Native Americans, especially at Wounded Knee, where they massacred them there after, immediately thereafter, they turned their guns in. So governments have a history of doing that. And yes, I live in Florida, which is sometimes called the Gunshine State, but I'm going to tell you right now, that is not a moniker that we have really earned, because this state has a very rank history of gun control, the majority of it aimed at Black Americans. Uh-huh. You better believe that's true. Gun control, more often than not, has always been a form of direct racism. So let's take a little trip down memory lane here in sunny Florida, the Gunshine State, where serial numbers were first used as a tool of oppression back in 1893, because Florida actually enacted a statute that mandated the recording of a repeating rifle's serial number, and later on it included pistols, with the county commissioners in 1893. Now, the wording of the act was vague and ambiguous, but the title of the act left very little room for imagination. And this was the title of the act, all right? Passed back in 1893. An act to regulate the carrying of firearms. All right? Right off the bat, the title tells you that it was an illegal act. Well, it wasn't just that. It was basically aimed strictly at Black people, okay? Because the history of this law here in Florida pretty much implied that it was meant to apply to Black people and not to white people. There was actually a surety required. In other words, there was a fee that the government charged back in 1893 if you wanted to lease your right back from the state. Gee, where have you heard that before? Right here on this program, where every time Roy starts getting really ticked off about having to lease his right back to carry a firearm. Well, this is where it came from, people. Back in the Jim Crow days, $100 was charged for Black people to freely own and bear a Winchester repeating rifle, and later it was charged against handguns too. And the serial numbers, get me? The serial numbers is what they used to basically register that gun to the person. $100 is what they were charging him. Now, in today's money, that's $3,100. Wait a minute. Yeah, $3,100. Can you imagine if the government passed a decree or a law tomorrow and said, if you want to continue to carry a firearm, you have to pay us the exorbitant fee of $3,100, or you don't have the right to keep and bear arms. Well, that's what these Black Americans were told back in 1893. Mm-hmm. So essentially that placed the permit out of reach, beyond the capability of the average man, the average Black man especially. But what was really telling is about a half a century later, a judge was noted as saying, matter of fact, Luis Valdez, GOA Florida director, he actually wrote an article about this. And this judge basically said that the law from 1893 was never meant to be used against white people, and he had never heard of or seen a case where a white person had ever been prosecuted under that law. Yeah. Well, I'm going to read you something from a case called Watson versus Stone, and I'm not sure exactly of the person who wrote this, but here is here it is verbatim. It says, I know something of the history of this legislation. The original act of 1893 was passed when there was a great influx. Now I'm reading verbatim. Don't send me hate mail saying that, oh, you're using racist language. I'm not. I'm reading verbatim from this document that dates back to 1893. Okay. The original Act of 1893 was passed when there was a great influx of Negro laborers in this state, drawn here for the purpose of working in turpentine and lumber camps. The same condition existed when the Act was amended in 1901, and the Act was passed for the purpose of disarming the Negro laborers and to therefore reduce the unlawful homicides that were prevalent in turpentine and sawmill camps. Does this sound familiar? Oh, the way to get rid of all this gun violence is to disarm everybody. We're going to reduce unlawful homicides by passing more laws to disarm the general populace. Yes, the general populace that are conservatives. I digress. It says, and to give the white citizens in sparsely settled areas a better feeling of security. Ooh, would that be like public safety? It continues, the statute was never intended to be applied to the white population, and in practice has never been so applied. We have no statistics available, but it is a safe guess to assume that more than 80% of the white men living in the rural sections of Florida have violated this statute. It is also a safe guess to say that not more than 5% of the men in Florida who own pistols and repeating rifles have ever applied to the Board of County Commissioners for a permit, which, remember, included recording the guns' serial numbers, to have the same in their possession, and there has never been, within my knowledge, any effort to enforce the provisions of this statute against white people. Now, get the last sentence, the last part of this sentence. Because it has been generally conceded to be in contravention to the Constitution and non-enforceable if contested. Oh my word. Did you grasp that? Yes, there's an admission, a stark, frank admission that they knew this law was unconstitutional. Oh my word. And yet they still enforced it against black American citizens. My. People, there's already a precedent in multiple states, including down here in sunny Florida, the alleged gunshine state. So what makes you think that this still wouldn't, you know, continue in various parts of the country? Because it continues until this day. You understand that, right? I don't know if you caught some of the most racist remarks being made recently by a very famous Democrat communist senator about not wanting certain areas of the city of Philadelphia to be armed. Yeah, that's for another podcast, but it's very telling. No, let's get to New York now. We've been here in Florida, talked about how serial numbers were used to register firearms to black Americans. It was not imposed upon white Americans. It was an act of severe racism, and the serial number was the root of it. All right? Now, another portion of an article that I was referencing in the last episode by Dean Weingarten, and I'm going to continue reading from some of that article. He said it wasn't until the passing of the infamous New York Sullivan Law, recently found to be unconstitutional, and that was the SCOTUS-Bruin decision, by the way, that found this law, the Sullivan Law, to be unconstitutional, that the use of serial numbers to enforce disarmament became common. The Sullivan Law eventually tied a specific firearm to a specific person on a broad scale. Other states, particularly in the Northeast, followed suit. The state of New York, under the prodding of the organized crime boss, Big Tim Sullivan, pushed the registration of guns well ahead of most of Europe. Now, did you get a hold of that? Yeah. Yes, gun registration is not only loved by criminals, it's proposed by organized crime figures. Oh, my word. and it's going to get better than that. But first, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back. Stick around. We got more to go here on the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast.
Hey, y'all. Rockin' Rod from Sigerman here. As y'all know, I am a licensed gun dealer. So if you're looking for firearms, you need to sell some, like to trade some, you can reach me at 561-445-0429. You know it, I know it, everybody with a brain knows it. Something just don't feel quite right now. Trust your gut, folks. Take care of each other. And never forget, taxation is best.
Sigerman, godfather of the dirty hippie mafia.
The Shooting Straight Radio Podcast is proudly sponsored in part by The Gun Sight in Merritt Island, with a 9-lane, 25-yard indoor shooting range, handgun and machine gun rentals, a fully stocked gun store with plenty of long guns, handguns, ammunition, and accessories to choose from. They're your one-stop shop in Merritt Island for all things necessary to responsibly exercise your Second Amendment right. Check them out at gunsightrange.com or stop by in person at 125 South Banana River Drive. And make sure you tell them that you heard about the Gun Sight on the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast.
Mega thank yous to Freedom Guns, the Gun Sight in Merritt Island, the American Police Hall of Fame, and Rockin' Rod Rao of Sigerman for sponsoring this episode of the Shooting Straight Radio Podcast. I was out at the American Police Hall of Fame, I'm sorry, out at the Melbourne Gun Show over the weekend, hung out with Rod Rao. We actually did an impromptu podcast out there, and that will be the next episode after this one. And so let's get back into this brouhaha that I've started about serial numbers being a stepping stone to disarmament of the American people, how it laid the foundation for registration. Because remember, in 1964, they wanted then to try to pass a national gun registry in America. So this has been going on for a long time. They've already got one that covers NFA weapons, but they want one that covers all weapons, and the ATF is secretly and criminally doing that as we speak. And yes, I know you boys are listening, and you're all a pack of filthy criminals. You're welcome. And so when they couldn't get the registration, they pushed for serialization of all these firearms. Well, why would you need that if you didn't have plans in the future to create a registry? Uh-huh. We talked about how firearms first began to bear serial numbers for totally innocuous reasons, but were later used, the serial numbers were, to create registries. And as a matter of fact, it happened in Europe, as a matter of fact. Well, apparently Big Tim Sullivan, who was a organized crime boss in New York, he pushed for gun registration in New York well ahead of Europe. And so New Yorkers, you can thank organized crime for passing one of the worst gun laws that it took a Supreme Court decision to overturn. And now look at all the people in your state, including Governor Hochul. I don't know if she is still governor or not, but anyway, I think she is. They are basically fighting tooth and nail to keep this law, this Big Tim Sullivan law, the Sullivan Act, keep it in place, even though the Supreme Court has ruled it unconstitutional. And so they're trying to pass all manner of other laws to counter the Supreme Court's decision. And a lot of those are getting shot down now, too. And those are other stories that for another time. But he pushed Mr. Big Tim Sullivan for the registration of firearms in New York. So I'm going to continue reading from Dean Weingarten. He says, in Europe, the registration of firearms appears to be an artifact created after World War I. In Germany, the registration of firearms was installed after 1919 as part of the requirement of the Treaty of Versailles. England had no registration of firearms until the 1920 Firearms Act there. Italy installed registration of firearms under Mussolini with the 1931 Public Safety Act. Does this all sound familiar? France installed general firearms registration from 1935 to 1939. Most of these measures were touted as public safety measures, of course. In the case of England, research done by Joyce Lee Malcolm, United States, and Chief Inspector Colin Greenwood out of Cambridge showed fear of an armed population drove the legislation. Feared by whom? That's right, the government. We continue. The crime rate at the time was extraordinarily low. The purpose of the registration was to allow the government in times of doubt to disarm its perceived enemies and to arm its perceived friends. What did I say earlier? That's right. They don't want to disarm the entirety of the population. They want to disarm you and I, my fellow conservatives, my fellow constitutionalists. They want us disarmed because they already not just perceive us to be a threat, they call us a threat. From a book called From Guns and Violence, The English Experience, page 162, it says, second, the Firearms Act of 1920, which took away the traditional right of individuals to be armed, was not passed to reduce or prevent armed crime or gun accidents. It was passed because the government was afraid of rebellion and keen to control access to guns. They're already calling us insurrectionists. They're calling the National Rifle Association a terrorist organization. They're calling you and me terrorists and insurrectionists and all sorts of other things, basically enemies of the state. Do you think that's just ignorance on their part? I trow not. That is calculated, people. Just as calculated as it has ever been down throughout history, including 1920. Weingarten continues, before the use of serial numbers, disarming of the population had to rely on brute force and physical searches for weapons. In England, before the English Bill of Rights in 1660, by the dubious method of royal proclamation, gunsmiths were once required to keep a list of people they sold firearms to. You know, just like federal firearms licensees are required to today. Such lists were not the registration of firearms because they did not tie a particular gun to a particular individual. A 4473 firearms background check form will tie that gun directly to you. All they need is the information off the 4473, and they've been getting it. Let's continue. The adoption of the English Bill of Rights in 1689 was partly in response to this sort of action. The requirement to keep lists by royal declaration was, quote, a device of uncertain legal status, according to Joyce Lee Malcolm. The proclamation was issued in December of 1660, and Joyce Lee Malcolm begins to expound on that. She says, with this police apparatus in place, the king turned to the royal proclamation, a device of uncertain legal status to tighten arms control. In September of 1660, he issued a proclamation forbidding footmen to wear swords or to carry other weapons in London. In December, another proclamation expressed alarm that many formerly cashiered officers and soldiers and other dissolute and disaffected persons to do daily resort to this city. All such soldiers and others that cannot give a good account for their being here were to leave London within 2 days and remain at least 20 miles away indefinitely. Oh, there's some banishment for you. At the same time, the royal government launched a campaign to control firearms at the source. Gunsmiths were ordered to produce a record of all weapons they had manufactured over the past 6 months, together with a list of their purchasers. Does this not sound familiar? In the future, they were commanded to report every Saturday night to the ordnance office the number of guns made and sold that week. Cashiers throughout the kingdom were required to obtain a license if they wished to transport guns, and all importation of firearms was banned. That sounds pretty currently familiar, doesn't it? It was less than a month later that King Charles II ordered a general disarmament of those considered to be his enemies. The timing of the fifth monarchist uprising was especially opportune, for it occurred the very day the last regiments of the Commonwealth Army were due to be disbanded. In response to this visible danger, these regiments were retained and 12 more companies were recruited to form the nucleus of a royalist army. Now, people, never forget that history always repeats itself, and the only thing men never learn from history is that men never learn from history. Now, why am I saying that? I assure you right now that the purging of our military by the current administration and forces therein is no accident. That's right. It's not something I want to get into deep right now and get away off in the weeds, but I want you to just have that in the back of your mind, okay? Believe me, they're trying to make sure all of our soldiers are loyal to, not the Constitution, but the current presidential administration, the Democrat Communist Party in particular. The article continues, the militia and volunteers throughout the realm were ordered to carry out a general disarmament of everyone of doubtful loyalty. By January 8, 1661, 2 days after the Venner uprising, Northamptonshire lieutenants reported that all men of known evil principles had been disarmed and secured, so as we have not left them in any ways of power to attempt a breach of the peace. Did you catch the way that was worded? So as we have not left them in any ways of power to attempt a breach of the peace. How many times have you heard me say on this program, political power comes from the barrel of a gun? Back in the older days, from the edge of a sword. But believe you me, people, the only thing that gives us political power and the only thing that gives us any freedom teeth at all is the fact that we are armed and currently able to defend ourselves against the federal government if necessary. But I want you to think about something because Mr. Weingarten makes a very good point here. And this is why we should never register our guns. If we are commanded to, let's go ahead and extend one giant collective middle finger towards Washington, D.C., and let them know it ain't going to happen. If you want them, you're going to have to do house-to-house searches, and you're going to lose a lot of people. We're going to make sure of it. Here it goes. Registration with serial numbers allows governments to circumvent the difficult and dangerous task of physically searching for firearms. Now, people, how many times have you heard, well, Nick, let them come get them? Well, if they have a registration, they won't have to. Listen up. The government can simply demand the weapons tied by registration to be turned in. If they are not available, various forms of coercion can be applied. State agents need never approach a person's home. Well, what do you mean by that, Royce? Oh, all they got to do is turn your water off, turn your power off, turn your phone off, seize your bank account. What you going to do then? Sit there in the dark and wait for them to come take your guns? Yeah. This is why we cannot ever, ever, ever register our guns. Ever. The day we do will be the beginning of the end of the free exercise of the right of the American people to keep and bear arms. I will never register my firearms. I will never willingly hand them over. And yes, you will have to pry them from my cold, dead hand. It might still be yet warm, I don't know. But you will be slipping on a pile of hot, empty brass. And the barrel is going to be a little bit hot. That is not tough guy talk. That is just Royce Bartlett simply telling you, our freedom is worth fighting for, it's worth defending, and it's worth dying for ourselves and our children and our children's children. And if you do not possess the same mindset, it's already over. Well, Royce, man, you're talking about fighting and physics. Yeah, yes. You know what? If we, the American people, had cultivated within our minds and our hearts a long time ago that every time the government passed a law that we would take up arms and surround the legislative bodies and tell them, this is illegal, it's unconstitutional, you are violating the law. And if necessary, we're willing to die to make sure it doesn't continue. You think we'd have any gun control in this country right now? The 1934 National Firearms Act would never have happened. The Gun Control Act of 1968 would never have happened. We wouldn't be where we're at right now had we had within ourselves the notion, the strength, and the will to stand up, literally, physically, and say, you are crossing a line, and if you come and try to enforce this, we are going to defend ourselves against it. Because that's where we need to be, people. All of this stuff was made possible back in 1968 when the federal government, when they couldn't get firearms registration completely, they settled for serialization of firearms. And look where we're at now. We have ATF agents photographing the bound book, the acquisition and disposition records of federal firearms licensees. We've got them taking the FFLs, the 4473 forms. As a matter of fact, the place they stored them in, there were so many of them that one part of the floor gave way. They had so many of these forms taken. They have been and will continue to build a national firearms registry. They already know, a lot of people, which guns they have. They already do. If you think it can't happen here, people, I got news for you. It most certainly can. Because it already began back in 1934. One last thing. It looks like the federal government has appealed the ruling by the judge that we talked about in the last episode, Judge Goodwin, where he ruled that once the firearm has been purchased by somebody, they can remove the serial number if they want to, and no law has been broken. And it was a good ruling, and that's the one we were talking about in the last one. So it has been appealed. We're going to see where it goes. I'll keep you abreast and apprised of everything that changes. And until then, keep your head on a swivel. Keep in touch with your representatives. Keep a loaded handgun on your person with spare magazines. And never forget, incoming rounds always have the right of way. Royce out.
Let's go!